What up, son? It's the tale of the tapes. The fuck life. Saying?
All right, Tale of the Tapes, Season 3, and this is Episode 12. On today's episode, we got Swifty McVeigh and True Life. So I told you guys last week about how 5 of the 8 D12 members made the cut, which were Proof and Eminem, who were covered in Season 2, the 90s, as they had solo material out prior to the group. Last week, we covered another 2 in Conniva and Con Artist, so that's 4 out of 5. Today, we covered the only remaining member of D12 to qualify for the study in Swifty McVeigh, and then we'll officially be done with all the D12 members that qualified. I have a little bit more of a backstory here with Swifty than I did with most of the other D12 members. Eminem, I obviously had a lot to say about, as he's one of my favorite rappers of all time, but I never had any personal dealings with Eminem or any of the other D12 members or anything like that. Swifty, I've actually spoken to on more than one occasion. This was a very, very long time ago, but very, very early on into this internet stuff, around when MySpace was still really popular and things like that, it was definitely post-Napster, but it's a little more direct now. So, for example, what I mean by this is that at that time period, artists started realizing, now listen, if you're a superstar, you don't need to come to this realization. But you're middle tier, lower tier, but established artists, right? They started realizing that they could just outsource for money. So instead of waiting for a popular or a famous rapper to ask you for a feature, or any rapper for that matter, I guess anybody that's willing to spend money for a feature, these guys could just offer features to independent or upcoming artists and stuff like that to help them gain a little notoriety and put some money in their pockets. So I had an opportunity to do a track with Swifty, but there's just so many things wrong with all of this stuff to me, and I don't really want to get into a great deal of detail about that shit. That's not really what the podcast is about, but everything that was going on is just not the way that I personally operate. So I respectfully decline the opportunity, which I tend to do a lot, but who knows, maybe one day in the future, something comes of one of these things that I had presented to me, because Swifty is not the only option that I have, but I just don't foresee any of it happening. But I don't want to say never. I've made that mistake before. You never know what the future holds, so I'm going to just leave that like that. As far as my predictions and expectations on these guys, I'm going to say the same thing for Swifty as I said for Conniva and Con Artist. I was never a big D12 fan, so I can't say I heard an overabundance of their material, but I didn't expect these D12 guys to score great based on what I had heard. We saw with Proof that I was dead wrong about that, but that was only Proof, not the entire group. I just felt like, oh shit, alright. It opened my eyes, and it made me curious about the rest of D12, but that finish was only Proof, and even Proof I was surprised by. And it was like, alright, damn, if the rest of the guys could do that, then I'm going to be really, pleasantly surprised. Again, that's not to say that I really liked the material, because it was never my cup of tea, but they were definitely better than I expected. So, here I am thinking that, alright, this is just Proof, not the entire group. We then, however, saw Con Artist and Conniva both land inside the top 40 last week. So that officially puts all 4 D12 members we've covered so far inside the top 40, which is not only an extremely impressive stat, but far exceeded my expectations of all members aside from Eminem. He's exactly where I thought he'd be. And as far as True Life, I can't say too much on him, because I only ever heard the one single that he had, the New York shit, and I don't really think I ever heard anything else from True Life aside from that. To be honest with you, I knew more of True Life from robbing other rappers and seeing him on, Beef DVDs and shit than I did of his actual music. But in general, I expected him to be pretty good, I guess, at least decent at the worst. He's a Puerto Rican rapper from New York City, and up to this point in the study, they've tended to do pretty well, so just based on the little info I did have on him, I'd say I expected him to finish just inside the upper half, so maybe somewhere between 100 and 125, give or take, around there. Both members of D12 last week had no solo material and made their debut with the group in 2001. Swifty McVeigh, no different here, and True Life also had his debut album out in 2001 as well. So still in the calendar year of 2001 here, but we're going to start off with Swifty McVeigh here today so we can finish up D12 before we get into any other artists. Born Andre Moore, March 17, 1976, also known as Swifty McVeigh and Swifty. Origins listed as Detroit, Michigan, United States. Genres listed as hip-hop and R&B. And his years active listed as 1996 to present. So, first and foremost, let me say that, similar to Conniver, there is little to no info on Swifty McVeigh individually, so I really had to dig deep to even just be able to find that little bit that I did find, but nothing really too out of the ordinary here. We spoke last week with both Conniver and Con Artists about how the years active were listed as 1996 to present because of having to do with being involved with Eminem and D12, so even though they didn't come out with an official album as a group until 2001, the group was formed prior to that. So let's just check out whatever other background info on Swifty McVeigh that we can find, and then we'll get into my breakdown. Andre Moore, born March 17, 1976, better known by his stage name Swifty McVeigh, is an American rapper, best known with his work for the Detroit-based hip-hop group D12. He was accepted into the group as a replacement for Bugs. So, like I said, not an overabundance of info to be found on this dude, but I will say right off the bat that even though that was a very small amount of information, it was useful, as I personally was not aware that Swifty was added to the group as a replacement for Bugs, who had passed away, so not really overly important, but relatively interesting stuff there. So let's hop right into my write-up on Swifty and see what we got there. Swifty, like the other D12 members, was a pleasant surprise. While he reached with some of his lines, he also had some really dope ones and was pretty impressive with the amount of syllables he was able to rhyme rather consistently. Even though he was the worst of the qualified members, he still managed to finish just above average lyrically overall. Swifty registered even less material than the other D12 members, as he was not on their first EP. Of the two D12 albums he was a part of, one was a classic and the other was a borderline classic. While those scores obviously weren't reached by just him, they are still impressive nonetheless. Out of only 33 songs in total, 6 were great, none were weak, and another 22 were good. Since Swifty had no solo material, it wouldn't be fair to say that 85% of his material was good or better, but 85% of his groups that he was involved in was, and that is absolutely absurd. By their own and Eminem's admission, for whatever reason, D12 was never really able to gain any real traction or popularity with record sales or commercial mainstream success, despite Eminem not only co-signing, but actually being in the group. The only time they ever really saw the light of day was in a few singles that had Eminem on them. On top of that, Swifty had no real clear influences on any other hip-hop artist to date. When it came to originality, the entire group was oozing with it, and Swifty was no exception. So just like last week, this sounds like an extremely similar but slightly different write-up from Conniver and Con Artist. Both Conniver and Con Artist were on two D12 albums and one D12 EP. Here we see that Swifty actually wasn't on the EP, only the two albums. However, we also see that he did officially score one of those as a classic and the other as a borderline classic, so 50 to 100% of this dude's qualified material was classic, and 85% of the songs were good or better, so extremely impressive stuff there, obviously, but let's get into the math here now so we can officially see how these slight differences in the math add up for Swifty. Lyrics, he gets a 5.5. Like I said, very similar to the other dudes, and I've talked about this with some other people. It's not overly important to bring up, but in this particular scenario, I feel like it's something that needs to be brought up. When the other guys are like a 6/5.5, and then this guy's a 5.5/6, and he had a little bit less material, and maybe there were just 3 or 4 or 5 lines that the other guys had that were just better. It could, when you're dealing with such a small body of work, it's slight differences that carry things. So again, should Swifty come out with some solo material or something like that, these scores could easily be changed. The three of them were very, very similar. Even Proof, I believe he got a 6 lyrically as well. So again, even though these guys were original and all brought their own thing to the table, they were very, very similar when it came to kind of like the style that they used to achieve the points that they got, and very, very similar in the heights that they reached in regards to scoring with those points. I mean, everybody aside from Eminem in the group, at least that made the cut, got a 5.5 or a 6. And this is the only guy that got a 5.5, and he's right there on the borderline of a 6. So you're talking about very consistent stuff there. And that's impressive considering a group that's scoring as well as they are with originality. As far as how Swifty got that lyrical score of 5.5, like I said, there were some times where he was pretty impressive with the amount of syllables that he was able to rhyme pretty consistently. I won't say it was every bar, but, you know, out of only 33 songs, it was pretty consistently. As far as lines, he definitely had some reaches. I thought the group as a whole did because they were just kind of on that silly type shit. So a lot of times when you rap like that, it's kind of natural that there's going to be some reaches or whatever. So like I said, he definitely did reach with some lines, but he also had some really dope lines. So he did show that he wasn't reaching with lines due to a lack of ability of being able to come up with a good line. He definitely had dope lines. It was just kind of his style and, you know, the way that this group was and stuff like that. And it was like, ah, come on, bro. Really? You know what I mean? So yeah, it hampered him a little bit, again, because even if there's only 5 reaches for lines, you're talking about probably only 33 verses. That winds up being 15 to 20% of his material has some weak lines on it right there. So, again, don't quote me on those numbers. I'm just trying to make a point how when somebody has this little material, there's a lot of little things that go a long way when it comes to that score at the end of the day, because there's such little to judge off of that everything they're doing is making like a big impact on that final number. Albums, he gets a 6.77 with one classic. And I need to point something out here. And again, we're going to have to talk about a couple of things, but I do just want to point something out. That's beyond a great album score. That's an album score in the range of pretty much everything being a borderline classic, which is wild. Even though he gets the extra point for the classic, I'm just speaking on averages here and how ridiculous it is that somebody's overall album score comes out to be the average of every album being a borderline classic. Now, again, I said there's a couple of things to talk about here, and there definitely is. So, first of all, it's only 2 albums. So, let's not, you know, get out of control and say this guy had 10, 15, 20 albums, and his overall album score is a borderline classic, which would be absolutely ridiculous. Don't remember if that was done or not. Possible by Eminem, maybe Tech N9ne or somebody like that, but I'm not sure that that was done with somebody that had 15 plus albums or something like that. So, only the 2 albums, yes, needs to be taken note, right? Now, on top of that, not only the 2 albums, but no solo works, just 2 group albums with the greatest rapper of all time so far. So, even though these guys were good and held their own, you do have to look at these scores and say, man, if these guys are getting, you know, 5.5 and 6 lyrically and getting these album scores like this high, what gives? Like, what were they doing? Was it so conceptual and so original and so many stories and this and that? Well, maybe sometimes, but you also probably had the greatest lyricist of all time on there, right? So that's going to raise the score at least a little bit. Now, that doesn't mean that Eminem was on every Swifty McVeigh song. I'm sure Swifty was on songs without Eminem. And I couldn't tell you off the top of my head if any of those were great or not, or if all of his great songs had Eminem on them. But, you know, I am just trying to make a point that when it's only 33 songs and you probably only had one verse on each song and it's only 2 albums and they're 2 group albums and stuff like that, you know, yeah, this is a really, really impressive album score. But again, it's one of those things. And I think the 3 members that don't have the solo material, Con Artist, Conniver, and Swifty McVeigh, I think all of these scores have to come with an asterisk next to them because, you know, it's just tough to really judge somebody on what they were as an artist when there really isn't much to go off of that is just them. It's all group material, and it's like, all right, yeah, it's almost like a preview, you know? Like, yeah, we're getting a taste of you, but we're not really seeing you come out with 10 albums here where we're watching you grow and watching you and we say, okay, I know who this dude is. You know what I'm saying? I don't know all that much about these dudes. And no, I didn't listen to them all that much before this, but when this came up, I watched interviews, as many as I could find anyway. I read up on things. you know, I watched some live performances. I listened to their entire catalog of songs, stuff like that. So I dug deep. I read up on them, you know, and again, I don't know all that much about these guys for the amount of work that I've put in finding out. You know what I mean? So again, I'm not saying that these scores can't be achieved by themselves. I'm just saying that they weren't, and it does need to be noted. Songs, he gets a plus 1.8. That's fucking awesome. We talk all the time, plus or minus a full point. Starts to become really significant on your final rating here. Almost a full 2 points there for Swifty. And like I said, that came from 33 songs in total that were registered for scoring. 6 of those were great. None were weak. So that came out to 18% of his material. You move the decimal place over one spot and it gives you a plus 1.8. So really solid stuff there for Swifty. Impact, he gets the same score as Conniva and Con Artist, and for the exact same reasons, I don't want to keep, you know, beating a dead horse and saying the same thing over and over again. So he gets a just below average score of 4.5 in the Impact department. And same thing for Originality, man. He gets a 9 just like the other guys. And don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure that all 5 D12 members, maybe Eminem might have got a 9.5. I don't exactly remember what Proof got, but they were all right around that 9, 9.5 ballpark range for every member that qualified in D12 on that Originality score. So, like I said at the end of his write-up, no exception there for Swifty. The entire group was extremely, extremely original. In fact, probably the most original guy out of the group didn't make the cut in Bizarre, and he was like one of the oddest individuals, I think, to ever be in the hip-hop scene. He may have gotten a 10 in the Originality department. I can't tell you that off the top of my head. I don't know if he took lines from people or anything like that. But, I mean, the group as a whole, extremely, extremely original. And, yeah, he gets a 9 just like most of the other members, if not all the other members in the Originality department. So, you add those 6 numbers up, because don't forget we have the extra point for the classic album. You add the 6 numbers up, you divide by 5, because that's the number of categories we got. And that gives you a final rating of 5.71. Which puts Swifty in 32nd place of 227 artists done overall. So not only is that another super impressive finish, but even more so considering all the things we spoke about last week as far as the amount of material put out, lack of solo work, and subpar impact scores. And for the record, this puts Swifty 1 spot behind Con Artist and 7 spots ahead of Conniva. This also means that all 5 qualifying members of D12 have landed themselves inside the top 40 thus far, as Eminem is currently in 1st, Proof is in 24th, Conniva is in 31st, Swifty McVeigh is in 32nd, and Con Artist is in 39th. This should place every qualifying member of D12 inside the top 75 or 100 when this study is all said and done, which is absolutely incredible stuff. So, major shout-outs to Swifty McVeigh and the whole D12 for not only very solid finishes across the board, but like I said, for exceeding my predictions and expectations. So, with Swifty McVeigh completely done, we've officially finished D12 as a group, as all 5 qualifying members have been completed, scored, and covered in the podcast. Obviously, this doesn't mean these scores will stay like this till we're done, as someone could come out with new material and change their scores, moving them either up or down, so we'll have to stay tuned to see if these stay this way, but for now, we are officially done with D12. So that means we can now move on to True Life, who, as I said earlier, also had his debut album released in 2001. His birth name is Roberto Guzman Rosado Jr., born March 19, 1976 in Lower East Side, Manhattan, New York City, New York, United States. His genres are listed as hip-hop. His years active are listed as 1997 to 2009 and 2016 to present. So I'm not 100% sure off the top of my head currently why exactly his years active are listed like that. Not sure exactly why it said 1997, and I also don't know whether he was locked up or went on a hiatus or briefly retired or what, but there's definitely a gap listed there from 2010 to 2015, so we'll have to keep an eye out for that, I guess. But for now, let's get into some additional background info for True Life and see if that helps at all. Roberto Guzman Rosado Jr., born March 19, 1976, better known by his stage name True Life, is an American rapper. He was signed to Jay-Z's Rockefeller Records briefly, but was incarcerated soon after. before signing, he had spent time with various other labels, featured on numerous songs, and had already generated quite a buzz due to prominent beefs, appearances on mixtapes, and Smack DVD. He was released from prison in 2016. He has since actively protested his innocence and stated that he pleaded guilty to a criminal charge only because of the situation being effectively stacked against him in such a way that he felt he could not win a trial despite the fact that he didn't participate in any crime. In 2017, he announced that he had signed a deal with American rapper Future's Free Bands record label under the aegis of Sony's Epic Records. So first of all, that was definitely a lot more information than I expected there to be on this guy. And I say that because I actually even cut some of it out as it didn't seem overly relevant. But we do see there that he was incarcerated shortly after being signed to Rockefeller Records and was released in 2016. So that explains the gap in years active. I looked into very specific detail about all these things and I thought the paragraphs were too in-depth and lengthy to paste into here, but I can confirm the gap in dates active being due to him being in prison, and also that he was active at least as early as 1999 when he was signed to DreamWorks Records. So most of all this stuff lines up with anything we weren't aware of initially. So now that we've sorted most of that out, let's check out my synopsis on True Life. True Life was easily one of the most disappointing artists I've covered so far. Lyrically, he was unimpressive. He took a lot of shortcuts and just flat out didn't rhyme far too often. While he did show the ability to use rhyme schemes on occasion, it was rare and heavily overshadowed by all the other technical mishaps. His ability to keep a topic and slightly improving on his second album were barely enough to land him just below average lyrically overall. True Life only registered 2 albums for scoring, both of which were borderline good/average. Of his only 34 song total, he had no great songs, 2 weak ones, and only 5 good ones, which, believe it or not, were almost all carried by features. While he did have one popular song and catch a buzz for making Mobb Deep strip down and snatching Jim Jones's chain, he appeared to be better at jacking rappers than he was at actually rapping. On top of that, he had no clear visible influences on any other artist to date thus far. The last thing True Life needed was another subpar score, and that's exactly what he got. Everything about True Life was typical of your New York Puerto Rican rapper, from his image, content and slang, to his rhyme style, delivery, and overall sound. On top of that, his entire sound and style took a dramatic change on his second album, copying what was popular at the time. So I'll just keep it short and simple. That does not sound like a good write-up at all there in really any fashion for True Life. So let's just check out the math here for True Life and see if it winds up being as bad as it sounded. Lyrics, he gets a 4.5. Like I talked about, the dude was just unimpressive. I mean, his shit was just littered with shortcuts, and then he would say, I can't tell you how many times I rewound this dude's shit where I was like, yo, did you miss something? Like, why did he just start not rhyming at all? And I'd rewind it, and he would just say, and he did this pretty often, bro. This wasn't like once or twice an album. This was like once or twice a song, possibly more depending on the song. And, you know, but I'm talking in the beginning, and I'm like, Is he just flat out not rhyming? Like, he just doesn't even care? So I'm like, rewind. And he's like, yeah, bro. Like, damn. Next song. 2 songs later. Whatever. Does it again. And I'm like, I hope this changes. Is he just being lazy? Does he suck? Like, what exactly is happening here? I'm a little bit, like, confused. If this dude is out here sticking people and robbing chains and doing all this, what is he even rapping for if he's not good? Why don't you just rob these motherfuckers? Go sell Jim Jones's chain. You probably make a year's worth of a salary if the shit's real. Like, yo, I know what I'm saying sounds funny, but I'm being dead serious with you. So that's the kind of vibe I got. And like I said, listen, obviously, you know, I can't score people off my expectations, but I could feel a certain way off my expectations. You know what I mean? Lyrically, he was a 4. On that first album. If I was scoring him off my expectations, I'd have given him like a fucking 2.5. Because I really wanted a lot more than that. And I was like, damn, what the fuck is going on here? Where if I didn't really have that expectation, I would have just been kind of like, this dude's not really good. You know what I'm saying? And it wouldn't have been that bad to me. 4? All right, whatever. There's a bunch of people that got a 4 in here. It's people that got two, two and a half, three, three and a half. You know what I'm saying? So four, I wouldn't have really been shitting on him that bad. But because of my expectation, that's not to say I expected him to be ridiculous. Like I said, I really know nothing about him. But I didn't expect him to score below a five, lyrically. That's for damn sure. I thought at the very least I was getting a five and a half. And maybe one of those five and a halves where it's like, you know what? He wasn't really special technically, but he did say a lot of really solid shit. Like, did drop a lot of gems, or he did say a lot of eye-catching, eye-opening, holy shit type things, you know? There just wasn't too much from this dude in any way, shape, or form, technically speaking. Like I said, on the second album, he was a little bit better, and he was pretty decent at being able to keep a topic. I'll give him that. And I felt like those two things, the fact that he was able to be pretty consistent with that through the two albums, and then on the second album, he was a little bit better than he was on the first. There was still some of the same problems. I don't want to make it sound like this dude did a 180, but he was better enough for me to put it back to a 4.5. And I was like, all right, you know what? I'll give it to him. He did enough there. With being able to keep a topic and improving a little bit on the second album, he did enough. But I want to be clear, he's a 4.5/4. I just spoke about that before with Swifty McVay. I don't always say that with people, but sometimes I just do feel it needs to be said. This dude is very close to going back to a 4. So should he come out with something else, the odds of him going to a 5 are unlikely. It would have to be really, really good on that album. Quite frankly, after studying him, I just don't think he's capable of that. But should he be the way he was on that first album, he'll be right back to a 4 quickly if he comes out with another album like that, for sure. Albums, he gets a 3.47 with zero classics, and that's just an average album score. I mean, everything is based off of a scale of 10, essentially. Right? Songs, you know, nobody's going to get plus 10 because you're not going to make 100% of your songs be great songs. It's just probably never going to happen. So not going to get a plus 10, but I'm just saying everything is based off a scale of 1 to 10. So if the songs are being scored 0, 1, 2, 3, 3 is basically a third of 10. So you have to times everything by 3.3 when it comes to the album scores. So if you have an average album score, if all the songs are average, let's say, and they're all 1s, the album's going to get a 1.0. Let's say there's 10 songs, they're all 1s. That's 10 divided by 10. It's 1.0. That's the album score. If all of your album scores are 1.0, 1.0 times 3.3 is going to be 3.3. That's what your album score is going to be, 3.3. So it's 3.47 here for True Life, so slightly above that. But in total, he does get an average album score there. Like I said, only two albums. Both of the albums were borderline good slash average. Either one of them could have been interchangeable. I think one was a 1.1 and one was a 1.0. And that's where they changed good slash average. Again, we're talking about wording here. Don't get super stuck on wording of me saying one was good, one was average. They were both pretty much the same for the most part. You're talking about a very, very small difference of a 0.1 in the final score, and we're calling it a different word. We have to call it something. I have to, you know, quantify these things in some type of way, but try not to argue with me because of my wording, because the wording is not important. We can call that album whatever you want, whatever word you would like to call it. Whatever that range is, from 3.27 to 3.62, what do you want to call it? Mediocre? Average? Whatever. You see what I'm saying? The wording is not important. The math is what's important here. So he gets a 3.47 in the albums department. Songs, he gets a minus 0.59. Like I said, he only had 34 songs in total, so certainly not a big catalog. No great songs out of the 34 songs in total, and he did have two weak songs. So that came to 5.9% of his total material. Again, you slide the decimal place over one spot, and that gives you a minus 0.59 in the songs department. So not losing a full point, but losing over a half a point. And again, you obviously want to be getting points, not losing points. Even if you're losing a 0.01, it's like you're subtracting from your overall score. That's the fucking last thing you want to do. And the two scores before this number were not great. I mean, they're not horrible. You got the 4.5 just below average lyrically, and you got the 3.47, which is an average album score. So not terrible stuff, but you need a pick-me-up. And then you just lose more points. You lose over a half a point. So not looking great here for True Life. Impact, he gets a just below average score of 4.5 again. And, you know, this is in some ways similar to a lot of other 4.5s, but a little bit different. Because, yeah, this guy did have the scenario where he had the one popular song. I don't really want to call him a one-hit wonder because I'm not really sure if that song was like a hit. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was. Maybe it was just like that in New York, though. You know what I'm saying? That to me, that song was probably just a really popular song in New York. That's probably what it was. I don't really know that it was a hit. So I'm not sure that he was technically a one-hit wonder, but he kind of is. You could put him in that category. That being said, again, you got to keep other things in mind here. Very small catalog. Only 34 songs, 2 albums. No names on his list of other artists' influence. So when you look at things like that, you're definitely looking more towards a 4. Getting close to the 3.5. Take away that really popular song, you're probably looking at a 3.5 right there. I think the song, when you have a song like that, that impacted an area, that's got to count for something. That's got to at least just give you a 0.5 point if you did nothing else. You know what I'm saying? If that was the only fucking song, literally, that you ever made, that's got to give you a 0.5 point. That's got to count for something. And then on top of that, I think you do have to keep in mind, I mean, it was even brought up in his background info and stuff like that, and I brought it up in my write-up as well, so that's something that I deemed important enough to bring up, and something that, you know, whoever wrote the other stuff on him also deemed important enough to bring up, that he did have a buzz going on his own. He was on these Beef DVDs, these Smack DVDs, he was robbing people, he was just, I mean, this dude was going crazy, bro. It was kind of funny, because a lot of people didn't believe a lot of shit that rappers were saying, right? You had certain people that idolized rappers and thought everything that everybody was saying was happening. You gotta understand the difference between entertainment and a real life story. And I'm not saying that means anybody can just say whatever they want on the mic, but there's a difference between somebody trying to paint a picture to you that they're a tough motherfucker and they're willing to kill anybody at any given moment, and they walk around strapped and look at them wrong and they're going to shoot you. There's a difference between somebody trying to convince you of that and somebody just kind of saying hood things or saying rugged things or talking about things they see. Nas is a really good example of that. Nas is from a very bad area in Queensbridge Projects and stuff, and I'm sure Nas has a lot to talk about. He has a song called Project Window, and I'm sure he's seen a lot of shit through his Project Window. I'm sure Nas has seen plenty that he could turn into deep, meaningful art. But Nas doesn't really run around saying that he's a killer. He just mostly talks about what he sees. So, to me, I understood the difference, but to some other people, it was like, these dudes ain't about none of this shit, you know what I'm saying? And it made you wonder sometimes, like, who is bullshitting and who is really about this? You know what I mean? And then here comes True Life, bro. Just, you know, it was almost like a joke, bro. It was almost like he had a cheat code and he had inside information that literally told him, like, yo, dude's a straight pussy. They won't even hit you back. Just walk up to whoever you want, punch them in the face, tell them to take their shit off. They'll just take it off and hand it to you. I'm telling you, nothing's going to happen. And, like, he was just, like, cool and just did it. Just started walking up to people and just making them strip and shit. And then going and getting on videos and holding their chains and being like, yo, what's up? Like, I got your chain. You know what I'm saying? I got this. You took your clothes off. This and that. Whatever. Again, I'm not trying to glorify this shit. I'm just saying it was pretty fucking funny. Because it kind of gave those people a lot of fuel. I knew these motherfuckers weren't about that. You know what I mean? But then they were big up in True Life for doing it. Because it was like, well, he really is doing it. You know what I'm saying? So I just thought between the one song and the buzz that he generated by just sticking rappers and being on these DVDs and doing what he was doing. And most of that was done independently. Most of that was before the signing to Rockefeller. So, yeah, he definitely showed that he was a dude that had the ability to be impactful. I had the ability to be popular or create a buzz or, you know, create activity and get people talking about him and stuff like that. He definitely did show the ability to do that. Again, he got locked up and disappeared for quite some time and stuff like that and did only have 2 albums, 34 songs, yada, yada. I've already talked about it. So, you know, again, you got to keep everything in consideration, but I think all things taken into account, he gets a just below average score of 4.5 in the impact department. And keep in mind, all of these scores are very fragile. All of these could change because only 2 albums and 34 songs. What if he comes out with another album next year where he's like a 6 for the most of the album, which isn't inconceivable. I don't think it'll happen, but it's not like we're talking Tech N9ne, Eminem, One Below, Big Pun. We're not talking he's going to come out like that. We're talking more like Scarface, people like that, where it's not inconceivable for him to come out and do something like that. Okay, maybe then he's a 5, close to a 5.5 lyrically. Let's say that's a good or a great album. And that brings his album score up to a 4, which maybe changes it to a good album score. Maybe he can have 2 great songs on there. And he brings his song score to a 0 instead of a minus 0.59. Maybe he influences a couple of artists or sells really well and he raises his impact score to a 5. You see what I'm saying? So these scores are fragile. They are what they are because he has to be scored on what he presented. And this is just what it was for what he presented. But I just want to be clear. With all of these guys, with the artists last week, Con Artists and Conniva, with Swifty earlier, with True Life here. And it's odd that all of these guys are right in the same time frame. What's the odds that these guys came out right there in the same month of each other and are all sitting here in the exact same boat fucking 22 years later when I cover them? It's fucking wild. It's another crazy quote-unquote coincidence that seems to happen all the fucking time in this podcast. And I love it. But anyway, originality, he gets a 3.5. And this one I want to talk about a little bit because this is the lowest originality score that anybody has ever gotten thus far in this study. I want to say it was probably somewhere around a month or two ago that we covered Beanie Siegel, and I believe he got a 4, if I'm not mistaken, in the originality department. And I think at that time, the 4 was the lowest anyone had ever gotten. I think it was mostly 4.5s at the bottom prior to Beanie Siegel getting that 4. And then this week, we got True Life getting a 3.5. Now, I want to be clear as well. I'm not saying it's a slash 3 because I don't really like keep track of that with the other things. It's mostly just lyrically because lyrically is constant, right? Every second, these guys are saying words, 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 words. So that's much more to keep up with. The originality score is more of something where you're just kind of taking random notes. Okay, that was very unique. Or, you know, he's not very good, but this, I've never heard anybody rap in this style before. Or he makes songs about things I've never heard anybody make. Things like that. And you just take right down little notes. And then at the end of the day, you look at everything. You look at the image. You look at the content. You look at the concepts, you look at the rhyme style, you look at just everything, the delivery, the voice, all the shit, and you say, all right, well, how original was this guy on a scale of 1 to 10? And you place it against everybody else's scores and what they did, and you put them where you put them. This could even be lower, bro. This could go down to a 3, and the reason I say that is there's almost nothing here to really give True Life credit for other than really his approach to the game and the way that he created a buzz and created a name for himself and got to where he got to. Not saying that was a huge place. Again, we got the impact of 4.5. But the reason I'm saying that he was able to get to that 4.5 was in his own fashion. And he seemingly, to me, stayed true to himself. How can I say somebody's bullshitting when the way they became famous is by robbing all these other rappers? And then they're on records talking about robbing rappers and being rugged. And then he disappears because he gets locked up. I gotta assume that this dude's being relatively honest. So I just want to be clear. Aside from those things, there really isn't anything there to give this guy credit for in the originality department. He just was your typical New York Puerto Rican rapper in every possible way. His image was typical. His content was typical. His slang was typical. His rhyme style was typical. His delivery was typical. His overall sound was typical. And like I said, we also have to keep in mind that on top of all those things that I just said, this guy's got two albums, right? One album sounds like this. The next album sounds like that. That second album was a dramatic change. Total 180 on what he was doing. And that would be fine had he became more original. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm not faulting somebody for changing. I'm faulting somebody for copying. Okay, grow, change, create your shit, find something new, find a lane. It may take you 10 fucking years to do it, but go for you. You know what I'm saying? How are you going to do a 180 on your style just to sound like what's out at that moment? That's not a good look at all. And this, what I'm about to say right here, might have some bias in it. My score doesn't have any bias in it, but what I'm going to say right now might have some bias in it. Being born and raised in New York City for 33 years, that's like the mortal sin. And what's wild too, is this dude would rap all the time about stop trying to sound on the first album. Stop trying to sound like the South, we're New York, this and that. And it was a breath of fresh air at that time. Because at that time, everything was the South. And if it wasn't the South, it was somebody from our area with a Southern sound. Now, some of that shit I didn't mind, and it depended on who the artist was. If it was Fabulous or something like that, and he's murdering some shit that sounds catchy, I don't really care. Because Fab's still killing it. So make it sound however you want. If that's going to get you more money and more radio play, do your thing. Just make sure those verses are on point. But, you know, to not really be very good technically and to base a lot of your shit off of why are we copying other sounds and then to come out some years later on a total 180 copying what comes out at that time and you're from New York City, it's like shame on you, bro. Really, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that to stir up any shit. I don't think True Life will ever hear this, but if he does, that's not why I'm saying it. He should understand what I'm saying because what I'm saying just is what it is. I'm not saying that this dude doesn't have anything to offer. I'm just saying that what he did offer wasn't unique. And if you look at what he offered in Project A in comparison to what he offered in Project B, it's a 180 and it's a copy. It just is what it is. So you add all those five numbers up and you divide by five because that's the number of categories. That gives you a final rating of 3.08, which leaves True Life in 222nd place of 227 artists done overall. Wow. So first and foremost, let me say that even though I didn't really know anything about True Life prior to this, my predictions and expectations of him were far off as they were with Swiftie and other D12 members last week. Only those were in a good fashion. This one certainly not. And wow, man, let me just say how surprised I am by this. Again, not because I thought True Life was super dope or anything. I didn't even know enough about him to think that. But I certainly know that I definitely did not expect this guy to be in the bottom five here, man. I mean, this is bad. While he wasn't dreadful lyrically, right? Like, okay, he could rap a little bit, I guess, right? Like, he wasn't awful. He wasn't good, but he wasn't awful. He still was just below average. And as much as that's pretty out of place for a post-80s New York City cat, it wasn't nearly the worst he did. So this one was just a combination of a dude not necessarily being good on top of offering next to nothing as far as bringing some uniqueness to the game. And to be quite honest, aside from robbing people, didn't bring too much to the game in general. So again, man, I don't say this to ream any artists here, but True Life really just didn't have much to offer across the board here. So I'm not sure where he goes with his career from here. Obviously, had plenty of bumps along the road for him. And I won't even sit here and try and pretend like it's not possible that any of these things played a part or a factor in where he finished. But like I always say, man, none of this is set in stone. True Life could certainly change these scores. Will he? I don't know. And personally, I doubt it. But All my other predictions the past 2 weeks have been sadly mistaken as well, so maybe I'm wrong about this one, but nonetheless, man, this is where True Life sits for now, inside of our bottom five, so a rough finish there for sure, but shouts to True Life, man. I wish him nothing but the best going forward for sure. Now, once again, this week, we won't be reading off our list, but next week on episode 13, we will. So if you're curious where anyone who was covered in the month of February finished, be sure to tune into episode 13 next week to hear all of our lists. In the meantime, if you'd like to see any of these lists, they're all in writing in the Tale of the Tapes Facebook page. If you're interested, the Facebook page is www.facebook.com/Tale of the Tapes Podcast. You can just give the page a like and a follow. You can stay up to date with the page, interact with the podcast, see the list, give ideas, predictions, whatever. You can also visit the host website at www.anchor.fm/Tale of the Tapes. For the record, both of those links are spelled completely normally. On the host website, you'll see a support button. Good looks to anybody who hits that for me. And with that, for some reason, it's 52 degrees out, so I'm taking my ass outside with my daughters. Next week on episode 13, we'll be covering Rex and Little Romeo. Tale of the Tapes. Peace.
Tale of the Tapes. Might as well.